You. I hope you're doing good out there. Thank you for listening to the show. I'm Johnny. I'm your host. I'm bringing you a bigger show today than most. I have three different guests. I have two guys interviewed at one time, and then a different guy interviewed from a different band at a completely different time. So there's a lot going on. But before I get into that, I'll tell you, I've been playing a lot this week, doing a lot of shows with Skyrocket. Last night we played a Halloween party. There were some good costumes. There were some good costumes. There was guys dressed as Kiss. A lot of guys dressed as Kiss. More than just like one group of Kiss, maybe two groups of Kiss. I find that guys that dress as Kiss, some of their costumes are good. Some of them, when you get up close, they're crappy. The wigs, a little weird. Usually the Kiss guys are pretty overweight. Anyway, we had them all up to sing on a song with us, a Kiss song. And they sang, you know, they had a good time. One guy picked up a cowbell and went nuts. I don't think he realized that everyone could actually hear what he was doing with that cowbell. But he did it anyway. Wednesday night, we played at this place here in town. It's called Steiner Ranch. Went out there. And I want to thank my friend Sandy, who has a hurricane named after her. One of the Sandys I know. She baked me... I don't know if she baked them, but she made me and brought me for my birthday these things called Oreo balls, which are like crushed Oreos, and then they're wrapped in frosting, you know, in the shape of a ball. It's a giant thing of sugar. It's like a stoner's wet dream. I don't think there's enough weed to make me eat that whole bag. I've had one so far, and I can feel it in my thighs. Anyway, so yeah, it's been a crazy week. Tonight we're playing another Halloween party, but in Houston. Tomorrow, another Halloween party in Houston. So I'll have some more costume stories for you guys next week. What are you going to be for Halloween? You should write me on Twitter or write it on the Facebook page. Send us your Halloween costumes. We'd like to see what you look like for Halloween. I didn't really dress up last night. I wore a Guns N' Roses t-shirt, which, oh, by the way, I want to thank my friend Katrina. When I was in New York, I went shopping with my friend Katrina. Tell me if this isn't nice. We went to a couple stores, and I was looking for a sweater, but I couldn't find one, and then I just kind of gave up. But then I saw this Guns N' Roses shirt, and it was like $50. I was like, what kind of Guns N' Roses shirt is $50? And I was like, I'm not going to spend $50 on a Guns N' Roses shirt. Well, opened my mail yesterday, and for my birthday, she sent me a Guns N' Roses shirt. But even more special than the Guns N' Roses shirt, which is incredibly thoughtful, and I love it. It's like the Appetite cover, you know, with the cross and the skull face guys on there. It's always good. She sent me a note, a handwritten note on a piece of paper. It was just a heart, and then in it, it said, thank you for being my friend. And that really made me feel good and special. So I want to tell Katrina that I love her. And thank you to Sandy and Rob. Thank you for the Oreo balls at the show. All right, you guys. I guess let's get into the show today. All right, we have a couple of interviews today. First of all is Shane Lawler, who was with Electric Touch. He was on the show about a little over a year ago. A lot has changed for him. He's got a new project, Ronson. He's got a Pledge Music thing going on. He was in town making a record, so I went and met with him. And he was with a guy named Johnny 8-Track, who was playing drums on his record, who was the drummer of a band called The Four Thieves, who has a band back in Brighton, in England, in UK, called Johnny 8-Track, simply Johnny 8-Track. And so I went to the studio and talked to those guys, and then a couple days ago, a guy from Southbound Drive, a guy named Lucas Griffin, he came over, and we talked about the new Southbound Drive album, Agnes. So anyway, my first interview is with Shane Lawler, who was with Electric Touch. They split up. He moved out to Tampa on a ranch with his wife and his newborn baby, Julian. A lot has changed with him for the last year. So if you heard that one last year early on, I think it's in the first 10, a lot has changed for him, and we catch up. And in that interview, I also talked to a guy named Johnny Aitken, that's also known as Johnny 8-Track, who I like a lot. I just met him. Very funny. We talk about my hatred for Kevin Costner. We talk about their musical endeavors, the new Ronson album, which Shane was here in Austin making. I think he's gone now. I'm not sure. I don't know. We'll find out, right? So anyway, without further ado, here's my friend Shane Lawler from Ronson, and then Johnny Aitken from Johnny 8-Track.
You got the whole world in your hands. You got the whole wide world in your hands. You got the whole world in your hands. You got the whole world in your hands. You got some silver screen stars
in your hands.
You got some silver screen stars
in your hands.
You got some silver screen stars.
All right, so Johnny 8-Track.
Hello,
Johnny Aitken.
That's me.
You're here from
Brighton in the UK. So it's where they filmed the movie Quadrophenia.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So it's a really musical town and just a really good place to hang out.
There's a great Stray Cat song, "Rumble in Brighton."
"Really?
You know that song?"
No, I'm gonna.
"There's a rumble in Brighton tonight."
No, I don't. Cool, I'll have to get on the internet and check that one out after this.
Yeah. What kind of So you're here on vacation or playing with Shane or?
Well, in the UK, you'd call this a busman's holiday. So I'm over here to do some work, trying to sort out getting some shows for South by Southwest next year, and playing on Ronson's debut album, which is really, really cool.
Cause, yeah.
Shane and I have played in bands together for years in our original hometown of Nottingham, which is where Robin Hood is from.
Yeah.
That's a one claim to fame. And now Jake Buck.
You ever run into him anywhere, Robin?
Yeah,
Hood?
Robin Hood. Oh, yeah. Yeah, often saw him around stealing from the rich.
Real quick, being from Nottingham, off the record or on the record, let's get your take on this. Who's your favorite Robin Hood in the movies? You can even use the fox from the Disney movie.
Favorite Robin Hood. Ooh.
I think he had an American accent. The Disney one.
Did he?
I think so.
I mean, it was always when old Kev was that,
Kevin Costner.
Yeah, that was funny. That he was. I was like thinking, where did
the worst
they get that
Robin
from? And then they got an Australian to do it. After that, the most recent one.
Yeah,
the dude.
His accent was good though, Russell Crowe.
At first,
when that movie
Russell Crowe played Robin Hood recently.
Mm-hmm. And originally, I thought his accent's wrong. He sounds far more northern than Nottingham. But then, as the story evolved, you know. It said that he wasn't from Nottingham. He came and replaced this guy that was from Nottingham.
That's kind
of how the real story, well, the real story, the legend goes, is that he was from further north of Nottingham.
Well, that's that a little while ago, there was a big debate. The people from Sheffield are trying to take Nottingham's one claim to fame.
Yeah, I know.
Steal it
back. They fucking have Def Leppard. What else do they want?
I know.
And the Arctic Monkeys as well.
Yeah, the Arctic Monkeys.
It's wrong.
I didn't realise that they were from there too.
Yeah, no, Sheffield is a very musical town. You have bands like Pulp from there. And
yeah.
Great band called the Long Pigs.
I saw a great documentary a few years ago on cable, randomly, about the Sheffield music scene. It was like on Showtime or something. It was amazing.
Oh, okay.
I didn't realise that Pulp had been around since like the 70s,
early
80s.
So long. Yeah.
Jarvis is like, it's like I don't know what he's done to keep himself, because he still looks the same.
Well, he looks fantastic.
Yeah. He's a freak.
Well, maybe his glasses just get bigger and hide more of his face, so you don't see the ravages of time.
Yeah. So I'm also here with Shane Lawler, my very dear friend, formerly from Electric Touch. Now you have a new project, Ronson.
That's right, yes.
So we talked a year ago, a little over a year ago. You were one of the first guests on my show.
That's right, yeah.
Now this is your return appearance. And in that last year, your life has changed dramatically.
It has, yeah.
You got married.
Yes.
You had a baby.
Yes.
And Electric Touch is no more.
That's right, yeah.
The end of that.
Things come in threes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had an album came out
The album was about to come out when I last talked to you.
That came out and we went on the road and, you know, did a bunch of shows. But then that wrapped up really and, you know, I couldn't really stop finishing these songs that I had started and that I had in my head, and so I thought, well, you know what, I'm just going to do a solo album, and I've never done it before. I've always been in bands with other people and been happy to be one of, you know, a bunch of people together.
So. If you don't mind, I mean, what happened? Was it just it ran its course?
It ran its course, I think.
You guys were...
We did five years together.
5 years.
And it was a lot of touring.
Intense.
It was very intense. And, you know, we got signed to a major and we went all over America. And we lived in New York for a bit and Los Angeles for a bit. Did all the festivals. And it was a wonderful, wonderful adventure. But, you know, like 5 years is a long time when you're living with people. And we shared a dream for those 5 years. And then, you know, people change and want to do other things. And that's the beautiful thing of life. You know, you can, it's one chapter that we did and everyone decided to, you know, let's do something else that we want to do. And let's pursue other interests.
So it was a cool kind of like, okay, we ran out of steam.
Yeah.
Let's go do something
else. There wasn't any fireworks or anything. It was just very, very normal.
Oh, you guys are nice guys.
Yeah. It was, you know, I was just thankful for all that we did and all the times we had together. And, you know, I've been fortunate to be in two bands that have done lots of great things. And so I'm really happy with how it went and was just excited to move on. And once, you know, you're in a band like that and once a couple of people maybe want to leave and do other things, you don't want to carry on under the same name. It's not the same group. And so I thought, well, let's just go our separate ways and do our own things. But on this album, I'm glad to have Portland and Isaac's going to come in from Electric Touch. They're going to play some stuff. And Johnny, that I used to play with for years, he's laying down the drums on it. And Glenn from The Thieves as well, he's going to come in and lay some stuff down. So it's kind of, you know, quite a lot of people that I used to play with are coming to guest on the album.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's pretty cool. I'm glad about that.
Yeah. So tell me, so you, the band split up. And you and the wife and Julian, your son, congratulations,
Thank you so much. Moved
to Florida.
Yeah.
And you said you still couldn't stop writing songs, obviously, you're a songwriter.
Yeah, we went to a ranch in Florida, which is where we're living at the moment. We needed a change, and it just seemed the perfect timing. We'd had the baby, and Julian, you know, we were devoting a lot of time to Julian, so we thought, well, let's go to Florida where my wife has family and let's, you know, be around family and do those normal things that, you know, not really been able to do for the past 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm living in Florida and on a ranch kind of in the middle of nowhere really, and so those, you know, when it gets late at night and Julian's sleeping, the guitar comes out, you know, and those lyrics start creeping in your head and you just can't stop. And so I had a whole bunch of songs and I thought, well, let's set a deadline and not overthink it, and let's make this very organically. And so I just booked the studio and thought, sod it, you know, let's do it.
Yeah. And you started a Pledge Music?
Pledge Music campaign, yeah, at pledgemusic.com. And the great thing is, it's one of those, you know, direct-to-fan websites. And the great thing is that it allows me to, you know, make an album with the people that are going to buy the album and listen to the album. You know, they're the ones funding it. And I don't really have to answer to any label or any, you know, manager or anything. I'm just making it on my own with those fans.
Right.
And that's pretty exciting. A bit nerve-wracking, but exciting as well.
I didn't read all the incentives.
There's some great ones on there, I think.
What do you got?
Well, we have a couple of fans are going to come in and sing gang vocals on a song.
Oh, that's cool.
And so they're going to be on the album. We have an old pair of jeans. I wore in a music video. You know, actually, you can join my book club.
Have you watched them?
They are washed and cleaned, I swear. Right. But I have things like a little book club on there that people can pledge and, you know, tell me the kind of books they like, and I'll send them one of my books from my collection and write a little inscription there for them. Just a few different things. And every pledge, you also get a download of the album. So, and you can just get a download if you want. But what I'm trying to do with this is, whilst we're in the studio and even in the writing and stuff, I've been sending updates to the people that pledge and little behind-the-scenes videos and pictures and things. So when they do pledge, they actually get a little window into the making of the album, because, you know, we've been musicians all our life and we know how it works, but a lot of people, there's a bit of mystery around it. And I kind of wanted to say, well, pledge on this album, make it with me.
And we'll demystify this whole
thing
for you.
Exactly.
We'll pull the curtain out behind you.
Exactly
Oz.
Right.
You'll see the wizard just sitting back in his underwear, picking his nose, watching the TV show. So where do the songs come from? Is there any kind of theme? You said you had a shitload of songs, like 16 songs.
Yeah.
Try and cut.
Originally, I wanted to do 10, and then that went to 12, and then it went to 14, and now it's at 16.
So time,
yeah, and Johnny hadn't heard any of them before yesterday.
So you're just coming in and like old school, like he plays you the tune, you kind of jam around, and then boom, you record it.
Yeah,
that's the best way to go.
Yeah, I think so. We don't want to overthink it. Just like get the right groove and it feel right, and then.
And so this is probably like a complete opposite obviously a thing from your last.
Yeah.
It took you guys forever to put out that record, and there was labels and management and committees and people, and now it's just you.
I know. I'm pretty easy to please, so you know we get it done very quickly.
So how do you guys cut it? Are you playing guitar?
Yeah,
with
him? I'm playing guitar with him and just kind of jamming along and singing a little bit.
Yeah.
And just feeling it through and, you know, doing a couple of takes, having a listen, maybe make a couple of changes and then do another couple of takes. And normally at that time we've got it in the bag, you know, and it sounds good.
Yeah. So you're going to record, are you going to mix all of this before Friday?
I mean, no, I'm going to do all the instrumentation and everything and do a little bit of singing. But then when I go back to Florida, I'm going to do another vocal session and sing all the songs and then going to mix it.
Are you going to put it, like, are you going to do it at your place or something?
No? You know what, no, I'm probably going to go to a studio out there and just do vocals, you know. I'm not too sure where. And one of the reasons why I came back to Austin is because, you know, I know Austin so well and there's so many great places to record here and I have so many friends here that it just made a lot of sense for me to come here and do it here.
Right.
But when it comes to the singing, I'm just going to get a studio out there and do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Johnny probably wanted to come out here instead of going out into the country.
It seemed
like a little bit more of a party guy than Papa Shane.
I'm a father as well.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but you're on vacation.
Well, yeah, I suppose. Well,
or would you call it busman's vacation?
Busman's holiday.
Busman's holiday.
Yeah. Where you go away, but actually you're just going away to work. But I mean, it's just really cool to come out and be in a completely different space. Because funnily enough, this all came together really randomly, because I'm working on an album of my own in the UK, and then me and Shane were just getting in touch via email, and the last time we'd been in the studio together was like 6 years ago, and it was just...
With the Thieves?
Yeah, with the Thieves, and it was just... Shane was like, what, you're going to be in Austin? And it was, you know, really organic. It's one of those things, maybe if we'd have tried to plan it, it would have never happened. And that's often when, you know, because the way we were in a band together before wasn't actually that dissimilar to this.
It kind of fell together.
2 weeks before the Greatest White Liar album, you know, I'd never met the guy I was playing with, and we're in there, we do this album, no rehearsals, about 16 songs. And then just there you go, and, you know, yeah, so kind of just quite random. And Austin's a pretty random place, been bumping into people, you know, went to Austin City Limits, and that's... Hadn't arranged to meet anybody, my phone ran out of power and just started bumping into people, and here we are now, doing an album at the end of the week.
Look at
that. Yeah.
Wow, so what's your band that you said you're doing an album with?
I'm a sort of a solo artist as well.
Okay.
Johnny 8-Track, and it's just, I'm a guy with a day job who writes songs about day jobs for anyone who's ever had a day job, and so on.
Like a working man's guy.
Yeah, I'm sort of... just trying to document my life the sort of the way it is.
What's your day job?
I'm like a sales coach, so I help people. I facilitate people helping other people spend their money. And now I'm trying to do that with music as well. So
so you coach people in selling?
I coach them in the art of tricking people into thinking they want something they don't really need, yes. And I intend to use this to sell my records.
Yeah, the Johnny 8-Track.
Yeah.
So, how far are you in the record? Are you?
I'm 50% of the way there.
Okay.
Yeah, been in the studio for 20 hours and got 5 songs down. If I could, I'd take Shane back with me and get him to come and play some bass. But having been in the womb, this recording studio that we're at, I think it'll have to be a case of going back, working hard, saving up some money. I mean, funnily enough, I'm doing in the new year, I'll be doing something called Indiegogo.
What's that?
Indiegogo, which I haven't set up my site or anything yet, is another way where you can offer incentives to people. And, you know, there's people funding albums and setting up businesses and things like that. And, you know, it's just a way of people being able to, you know, share art with people. You know, because, I mean, no one can stop you making music. You just... The really hard part is getting people to buy it and selling enough for those contracts to renew.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we were talking the other day about all the things that we've done and the TV shows our music's been on and things like that. And
yeah.
I talk to people where I work in Brighton and they're like, you should be a millionaire by now, you know.
It doesn't work like that.
It sometimes. But it's just you know, really good to still be, you know, doing interesting things. And I'm going to go back and back in the studio on Saturday, so it's really exciting. Really exciting
here
at the moment. In Brighton, I'm in a place called Church Studios, where, funnily enough, Herbie Flowers sometimes records.
Who's Herbie Flowers?
Herbie Flowers was the guy that played that crazy bass line on Walk on the Wild Side.
Oh, you know, yeah. Genius guy.
He was.
The classic albums thing on VH1 where he's he was just trying to get double his money.
You've just stolen my story.
That's the best story though. Like, to think that the coolest bass line in the world is just some guy trying to get paid twice as much. Fucking awesome.
It's brilliant. I'm going to try that one with Shane later.
I'm going to play it backwards. So you just recorded in Abbey Road?
Yeah, earlier this year I was really lucky to... It was a bit of a sort of a, you know, kind of guerrilla session, just sneaked in and tagged on.
Are there specters in there? Do you feel the energy of what might have happened? A lot of shit happened in there.
I mean, what's really weird is when you go up to the building, because I'd never been there before, it's really, really unassuming. I walked by it the first time. It's just this, like, weird little house with foreign students walking across the zebra crossing and cars beeping at them.
Right.
And then you go in and then you're just walking around and there's, you know, pictures of all these incredible artists there.
Yeah.
But like the control room is really unassuming, and I think maybe that's one of the things about it, is it's just got this ambiance of, you know, you're just here to make amazing things happen.
Yeah.
And I was in the room where the Beatles recorded.
Wow.
Which is really cool.
With the upstairs control room in it.
Yeah, so tiny little control room, and then you go down these huge great big steps, and there's just piano in there, and, you know, I got some cool pictures which I'm going to stick on my website at some point. And what was really fun was we just ended up getting all the people in the room. I made up the song on the spot. It was about a pretty crazy thing that was happening at the time in my life.
What's that? Can you talk about it?
It was just like, you know, when, and the, I mean, the EDL were coming into Brighton, the England Defence League, and there was a lot of, you know, Brighton's a really, like Austin, it's a place that's full of positivity and energy, and there was lots of really negative things happening. And the track I recorded is called Why Can't We All Just Get Along? And it's kind of a rant about, which is funny, someone's ranting about people not getting along. So,
right. So
we just got like, everyone who was in the studio at that time, so like the sound engineer, all these people who were just like, what? And getting, so there's some like gang vocals on the chorus and everything.
Oh,
and
I'm going
back to finish that off in November, so
when
that's all done, I'll share that with you.
Excellent. Is there Johnny 8-track albums out there already? Can people find your stuff? How do people find you?
You just Google Johnny 8-track, and I've got a little website, and
the number 8-track.
Yeah, the lucky, because it's a very lucky number in Eastern philosophy. So
8.
Yeah, the number 8. Yeah.
But it has nothing to do with 8-track cassette machine made by Tascam.
The eight track thing kind of came because it sounds a bit like my second name, and also because I always go on about how like tape is really good, and people are like, oh, you're so freaking retro, Johnny. You're like a freaking old, you know, like those old 8-tracks, man.
When you're recording in Abbey Road, I bet you're going to Pro Tools.
It was Pro Tools. Yes.
That's weird.
Yes, it was. But I mean, you know.
Still.
Yeah. It saves time.
Yeah, that's true.
I think we actually recorded on one of the consoles from Abbey Road though, when we recorded at Toe Rag Studios in London.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, and I think it's one from Abbey Road.
Can you confirm that?
So yeah, you've actually done it just in two separate places. You've done it all, you know.
Yeah. So Shane, what is Ronson? Is there two S's in it?
Yeah, yes. Two S's,
is
because
it some kind of Swedish.
No, the reason is. So my dad's called Ron, basically, you know.
You're Ron's son.
I'm Ron's son, you know, and people would say, you know, there's Ron's son or whatever. And so it just felt like, well, I'd like to pay homage to my father, because he was a musician that definitely inspired me to make music. But the one with one S, it was already taken. They make cigarette lighters and fuel. And so I thought, well, if I get the two S's, it's actually how it would be spelt, but it means I could get the .com.
Yeah.
So I went for Ronson.com.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now you have that.
Yeah, so I have it.
And is it set up? People can just.
It's
go
not set up yet. No, I bought it and I haven't got to doing it because I've kind of been directing everyone to the Pledge Music site.
Okay, and what's the site?
That's pledgemusic.com/projects/ShaneLawler.
Yeah. So people can just go there and search your name.
Yeah, Shane Lawler. And if you just type Ronson, the beautiful thing about Ronson is that if you just type it in Google now, it will come up with me at number one or number two, so it's really easy to find it.
Okay, and not like...
not the liars.
There's not a whole shitload of people out there that are also Ron's son.
You know, when you find...
You didn't meet any illegitimate brothers or sisters
out there. I think it's safe, and the thing is, finding a band name nowadays, the most difficult thing is finding one that isn't already taken. And although it's very similar to other ones, it's not taken, there isn't a million other artists using
the same
name.
It's hard, isn't it?
It really is tough. And I think it dictates now what you're going to call your band, because
before,
there may have been another band somewhere else over the world called the same thing, but you'd never know and you'd never care,
Yeah.
But now it's like, well, God, you can't. Facebook's taken, the Twitter thing is so important, you've got to make sure
people
find you. Oh, we're tweeting all the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Always tweeting and Facebooking. And yeah, I use it a lot, I really do. I like
you
to be able
you
to
have
communicate.
To. I do it.
Yeah.
I don't know who I'm communicating to. I'm just constantly telling. Well, my girlfriend broke up with me at the beginning of the summer, and I found it just a great way to feel like when I'm alone, I feel like I'm talking to someone. I make a great joke when I'm watching a movie. I put it on Twitter.
Yeah.
And then like 8 people like it, as opposed to just one person sitting next to me. So
yeah.
While I'm physically alone, I am with many more people.
Yes.
I find.
I like that.
So what else is going on? What am I missing here? You're going to play? You're not going to do any shows while you're here?
No, not going to do any shows. Going to be just here most of the time, really. And I'm definitely
But you've got a lot to do. You've
got loads to do. Yeah, 5 days to do it all, really. And I'm confident that I'll do it as long as we just keep the pace. We set a pretty good pace yesterday, doing 8 songs. And we do that again today. And yeah, I'm not overthinking any of it. Just I have them all in my head and what I think it should sound like and what it should feel like. And then it's just like having the time to let the hands do what the brain, is thinking.
Yeah.
Get it done and get it down.
Yeah. Well, great.
Yeah.
Is there anything Exciting. Is there anything I'm missing? It's great to see you.
It's great to see you too, man. Yeah. It's awesome. Always nice. I love it when we get to hang out.
Yeah.
But no, that's it really. That's everything that's going on. Right now it's in this album, it's in this room.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping it's going to be the start of an exciting new chapter, we'll see.
It will be an exciting new chapter. And so people can still, how much are you asking for the pledge?
It's $10 is the minimum.
But is it like Kickstarter, there's a certain amount you got to get?
There is, yeah, there is a certain amount and I'm...
But you don't have to say it.
Almost 40% of the way there.
Okay.
I did it as low as I could possibly do it to be able to record it. And actually make the CDs that people were pledging for. So I set it really low, and when I reach the target, then I give 5% of it to Ham as well.
Right,
they're so awesome.
Yeah.
So once I hit that target and we know that we're going to be able to follow through and make the album, then they get a cut of everything after that.
That's great.
Yeah. Because they're pretty awesome.
How hard is it to do one of those pledges? Do you just
it's
sign
really
up
easy.
And it just lets you do
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you just sign up for it and... It takes a little bit of time to prepare for it and to put in all the exclusives and, you have to do a video and like your pitch, what it is. And probably, 5 or 6 hours of work. And then once it's set up, it's really a great way to, keep tabs on your fans and update them and has all these widgets that you can put on Facebook. It's really easy. You don't have to be computer savvy to do it. Right. And the reason I went with Pledge Music was... Because it was tailored specifically for music, as opposed to Kickstarter, which is a bit of
anything,
everything.
Right.
I thought, well, I'll go for this one, and you can has things where people can sign up and get a free song and all kinds of things. And with them, I could donate it to this charity, so this organization. So it's really easy; just take a little bit of time.
Yeah,
and you can set it for shows that you want to do, tours, EPs, videos, pretty much anything to do with music. And, you can set a target. You can type in how many followers you have, and it will help you find a realistic target to what they think you might be able to get.
Like how many Facebook people and stuff
Yeah,
like
how many Facebook people you have or friends you have and how many Twitter followers and stuff like that.
Right.
So, yeah, I had my figure, and then I halved it because I just wanted to make it as easy as possible to... I just want to make the album, really. That's the whole point of it, is to have these songs, so...
Do you have a name for the album?
I don't. I mean, God, have you got any good ideas? Because I really don't know yet. I'm really not too sure. I like the whole Saturday night and Sunday morning thing. I mean, you know, I love the whole Nottingham reference.
What is that?
Alan Sillitoe book.
Oh, okay.
Saturday night and Sunday morning. It's right. Really good, and it's a great movie as well.
Yeah, well, Albert Finney, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That even scenes in Nottingham's now defunct castle, which did not feature in said movie where Kevin played Robin Hood.
That's right.
I hate Kevin Costner.
Get it together, man.
I do. I don't like him. You know what I like most about him is in Madonna's movie Truth or Dare. Right. He goes backstage, like it's one of those documentary movies, and he goes backstage and he goes, "Hey, thanks for having us. The show was really neat." Then he puts his two fingers to his lips and he does this little kiss goodbye to Madonna. And when he walks away, she goes, "It's awesome." She sticks her finger down her throat like she's puking. It's amazing.
I was coming from a working title for the album, Johnny Hates Kevin Costner. It's just a working title.
Okay. Oh, remember Johnny Hates Jazz?
There we go.
That was also named after me. But now I like jazz, so that band has rescinded their name. It's not called Johnny. So now Johnny now likes jazz. Johnny now likes jazz all of a sudden.
Nice.
He's trying to seem more important. Well, good luck.
Thanks,
with
brother,
the record. Yeah. And good luck with your record, Johnny 8-Track.
Thank you, sir.
This will be posted at the end of the week. Brilliant. On the internet.
Marvelous.
Love
it. Post it to your millions of Twitter.
I'm going to be tweeting about this.
Tweeting?
Like, I'm going to be tweeting about this.
Johnny 8-Track and Ronson joining forces.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And creating the Ronson album.
That's right. It's going to be special. I'll make sure I send one to you.
All right. So everyone go to the Pledge Music. Be sure you kick in some shekels. Send a little money to my man.
That's it.
And you're funding yours with your sales.
I'm just going to make loads of commission. And yeah. Using capitalism to fund rock and roll.
All right. Johnny, Shane, thank you guys.
Thank you, Johnny.
All right. Cheers, man. In your hands, you got the whole wide world. In your hands, you got the whole world. In your hands, you got the whole world. All right. Shane and Johnny. That music there is from Johnny 8-Track. I guess the Ronson music will be up sometime soon. So I'm glad those guys had me over to the studio to talk to them. Always a good time seeing Shane. Love him. It was nice to meet Johnny. And so now to the next part of the show. My next interview is with a guy from a band called Southbound Drive. This guy's Lucas Griffin. He wrote me an email, and he told me about his band, that they got this thing going on with this company, The Smalls, out in England, which is this filmmaking collective. He actually explains it really well in the interview. And, you know, talks about the band. They just put out a record with a great producer, an old friend of mine, Chris Frenchy Smith, who I've been trying to get on the show. He's going to be on the show at some point, I'm pretty sure. I'm convinced. But he produced The Darkness and The Toadies' latest albums. And You Will Know Us by The Trail of Dead's latest album. I mean, it's over the top, this guy. So they got to work with the great producer to make their 7-song album, Agnes. So I guess without further ado, from the band Southbound Drive, here's my friend, Lucas Griffin. All right. Oh, that was a terrible fade. Well, I did it from the SoundCloud.
Right on.
And then it has a fast end to their fade.
Oh, I see.
Anyway, so Lucas.
Hi there.
Lucas Griffin.
How are you, sir?
Welcome to my apartment.
Thank you very much.
This album, Agnes, this is your... Do you call this an EP or do you call it an album?
Well, it's a seven-song album.
Effort. I mean,
it's a long EP. I guess by
or a short standard, album
or a short album.
How long is it in its entirety, do you know?
It's under 30 minutes.
I had a guy on here the other day. I had like a full length album that was like 22 minutes.
Oh, really?
All of his songs are under like 2 minutes. It's the weirdest thing.
It's like an old Ramones record.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. But I wonder if, you know, like a guy, maybe the guys in Fish, maybe they make love for a long time because they play songs for a long time.
their songs go on for a long time. Maybe
just on and on and on.
Like 1.5 minute songs, ladies aren't happy with you.
Yeah.
I don't know. So this is a very collective band, Southbound Drive.
Yes.
That's the band.
Absolutely.
Yes, which I probably announced before we came into this. But tell me a little bit about Southbound Drive. You guys just got together fairly recently in the history of rock.
Yeah, absolutely. The August of last year is when we first started getting together. And what we were Scott, our singer.
Right, you were his backing band.
We were his straight backing band.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He released an EP, needed a backing band. So the call went out, enlisted Ryan Goebel, Chris Sod, and myself to play the EP. Started getting together, and then we just started writing immediately. I mean, it just really came effortless.
As a group.
Yeah, so it went from being a backing band for Scott to just being this, you know, a band.
Yeah.
And just writing together and, you know, and really all sharing in the talents of songwriting and creating music.
Organically.
Absolutely.
Where did you guys all come from? What's your story?
My background, yeah. Musically?
Life. Where were you born?
I grew up in Virginia.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I grew up out there.
Norfolk, Virginia.
Where's exactly Norfolk?
That's off the coast.
Right
next to Virginia Beach area, nice. Southeast side of the state.
Okay.
And then moved to Phoenix, lived in Phoenix for a while, played in a bunch of bands there.
How old were you when you moved to Phoenix?
I was 18.
Okay. So were you already playing?
Oh yeah.
In Norfolk, how did you get introduced to music? Was your family music people?
Both sides of my family were, actually. There were musicians on both sides. My dad's side, I wasn't real familiar with them as musicians, but my mother's side, definitely. Anytime there was a party, anytime there was a get-together, there was 3 or 4 guitars in the back, yeah. In the backyard, yeah, you know, yeah. playing like old-timey songs. There was probably a banjo, a dobro, that kind of thing.
Is that how you picked up on it?
Yeah, that's...
Like, I want to be one of these guys.
Absolutely. I definitely wanted... For me, you know, wanting to learn how to play guitar was more of a, I want to be in the circle than it was, I want to be a rock star or I want to be on stage.
Right.
It was like, I just want to be
I just want to participate in this thing with my family and,
exactly.
And be part of the music.
Yeah. And then from there, I went to high school bands. I became a drummer when I moved to Phoenix and played in a couple of different punk rock bands.
Was that your first instrument or was guitar?
Guitar was.
Okay.
And then...
did you have like uncles or something that taught you stuff? How did you learn?
No, I picked up on it on my own. It was a lot of
trial and error.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Absolutely. And then my high school bands always had band practice at the house. So band practice would be over. We'd get done playing. They'd all go home. Everybody would leave their gear at the house.
Right.
And then I would
start
explore.
Jamming on stuff.
Yeah. So yeah. I'd just start banging on drums or the bass, you know, whatever was around at 13, 14 years old.
Yeah.
And it just kind of went from there.
You know, what's funny is I think that I became, I started playing other instruments because I got to my rehearsal place one time early and everyone was late. So I just sat back there and played drums. And I thought like, wow, if I came an hour early, you know, to rehearsal all the time, I could jam on drums or stay late. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'll catch you guys later.
Yeah. And that's the thing is it was, you know, making music was so new and it's always exciting, but when you're first starting off and you hit those right notes for the first time, there's nothing like it, you know? And, if I can do it on the guitar, then what'll happen? How will it feel when I do it on the drums or when I, you know, write a killer bass line or just, you know, hit that triad for the first time.
Right.
And it just kind of went from there, you know? And, as far as the band goes, I ended up on bass after being a drummer because I really enjoyed the work.
What kind of stuff were you doing? Wait, you enjoyed the what kind of work? Wait, I don't want to interrupt that thought.
No. Well, what I was thinking was when I was a drummer, my bass players were killer.
Right.
And when you're a drummer with a great bass player, it's very inspiring, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that drew me to the bass away from the drums was the fact that that these guys were really just really have an impact on the band, you know, and if they really want to, or if they really have the desire to, they can make a song something else very subtly, yeah. without making
change
a huge
the quality
impact.
Of chords.
Exactly.
So you can dictate where the melody can go.
Mm-hmm. And then that's when I started really taking it seriously. So then moved to Austin looking for bands. Met up with Scott.
Well, wait. Let's go back to high school. What were you listening to? Like when you started your first bands, what were the bands? Were they original bands or were they cover bands or were you kind of reacting to what you were hearing or what were you into?
I've never been in a cover band, so to speak. Yeah. I've been in bands that have done cover songs, sort of thing. And I guess every band starts off by playing songs that they
A lot
they
of
like.
Times that's how you start off. There's some cats just start off like, no, I wanted to write songs. That's why I started playing guitar.
And that was more of the line of where we were coming from or where I was coming from was more of, you know, the creative aspect of it. But a lot of...
Not for the chicks.
Actually, no, not really. I mean, that wasn't really a part of it for me.
Was it a pleasant surprise?
It could,
once
yeah,
you got into
absolutely.
The situation where you're like, whoa, wait a minute,
hey,
what?
This works out.
Yeah, this actually is very cool.
Yeah.
So what were you listening to? Like, what was the style of music you were playing?
Back in like the high school days.
Yeah, like your first band. And what was the name of it?
The first band The first band I was in was in high school is a band called Source. And we were like a 90s style, hard rocky kind of groove band, if that makes sense.
Like
it was like
311 or something?
Not really that groovy. our favorite band as a group, and still one of my favorite bands
Give
to
me
this
that.
Day.
Who is your band?
Is a band out of Maryland called Clutch.
Okay.
They've been around since the
They've
early 90s.
For a long time.
Long
yeah.
time. And
yeah.
they were regional to us. So we would go see their shows every weekend. So they were inspiring not only in what they were doing musically, but also like how they carried themselves.
Right.
I mean, how they, you know, how they approached the stage. So that I think that was an influence on all of us.
Did you guys go see the bands as a band, like together?
We would. Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, oh,
yeah
man,
and that was...
We got to get that thing going.
Exactly. And those were those conversations.
Awesome.
Those are the, you know...
Those are the awesome times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who else were your bands? Clutch and who else? Like, who was your, you know...
Let me think
back. Was a record that didn't leave your disc player?
Let me think about that for a second, because there's a few. I was into a lot of old punk rock.
Okay.
Back in the day, a lot of early Rollins.
Well, there's
band.
A lot. I mean, Virginia was a big, you know, like DC was a big punk rock place.
Oh yeah, you had Fugazi.
Yeah,
you had Minor Threat. All Ian McKay stuff.
Yeah.
Discord was out of there. Going up the coast.
How did you find out about that stuff?
A lot of that just kind of filters in.
Yeah,
you know,
maybe a guy at school. Had
yeah,
a record,
exactly.
Like,
and
hey,
that
check
was,
this out.
And that was the day of copy and tapes.
Right. Yeah.
You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
like somebody.
Yeah,
because
before the internet, you can't just like look up shit. You,
no.
you have to have a guy.
Exactly. You know, somebody gets the new Bad Brains tape. You
right,
know,
right.
and then they copy it, and you know, there's an unwritten rule. Next day, you brought it right back.
Yeah.
You know, you made your copy that night. You brought it to school the next day.
Cool.
So yeah.
So you were into all that kind of stuff, and,
yeah.
and was that kind of reflecting the kind of music you were playing?
A little bit,
like in, you know, pretty intense.
It was
aggressive.
Yeah, definitely. There was a lot of emotion in
yeah.
it for sure. You know, a teenager.
Yeah.
You know.
And so,
13.
Did you guys get to play gigs in clubs? Like, did you ever get to open for Clutch when you were a teenager
no.
up there? Or anything?
No, it was never like never on that level. Not really.
Yeah.
I mean, we played little shows here and there, but nothing that really panned out.
Okay. So then you moved to Arizona.
Moved to Arizona.
What city?
Phoenix, or just outside of Phoenix, Tempe area.
Tempe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And played. And that's when I moved over to drums, tired of guitar, and then I played in a couple bands there as a drummer. And then that's when I started working with the bass players. Then that's when I was really starting to pick up on what they were doing and how their interaction between what I was doing as a drummer and the guitar player was doing, you know,
right.
how they could translate.
Just paying attention to
mm-hmm.
listening.
Exactly. Spent a lot of time
maturing
listening.
As a musician and not really trying to get your thing in, but
mm-hmm.
trying to see what everyone else is doing and where you fit in.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's a cool way to approach it.
Yeah. The last band I was in Phoenix was a three-piece progressive. I mean, to call it prog is kind of
prog.
Pretentious.
I love that though.
For us though. Yeah. I mean, it was definitely like odd time signatures and that kind of thing. And sometimes had a jazzy feel or a world beat feel. We were a three piece. I played a five string bass. Our guitar player played a 12 string electric, and our drummer was a jazz trained world beats his other bands were Brazilian bands and that
kind of thing.
So it was, that was...
And what year was that? What years?
That was probably 2000s? From... Yeah, that was from like 07 to...
Oh, okay.
2010 maybe.
Wow.
That
okay.
we were active, you know, doing like the...
Recently.
Yeah, that was pretty recent. You know, we had a lot of fun.
Couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then you moved here in 2010?
Moved here last year.
Okay.
Last year.
What brought you here?
Getting out of Arizona.
Tempe.
Yeah.
Can I tell you what happened to me one time when I was in
Absolutely.
Tempe? I went on stage with my band, and we played the first song, and a girl yelled out, "That was terrible, go home." And I think it was the first night of like a tour that pretty much was like that night.
Yeah, it kind of set the tone.
I think so. The next 2.5 months were miserable. I don't remember because I just got drunk. But
yeah,
I remember that.
Do you remember where it was, where you were playing?
I can't remember. I can remember what the setup was. I remember you come in the door and you turn right and kind of the music room is happening over here. And then back over there was another room because we paid our drummer $50 to run on stage with the band that we were opening for and take his shirt off and dance.
Oh, yeah.
They hated us. Well, I think it was one of their girlfriends that said that.
Yeah.
That was my retaliation.
So there you go.
Paying my drummer $50. Not only getting insulted, but then losing money just to not even embarrass them. It probably made their show pretty interesting. Not that their show wasn't interesting. I'm just saying that like the added drama of the guy from the opening band taking his shirt off and dancing with
you. I love stuff like that.
Yeah, me too. So you moved here.
Yes.
And what... I know you wanted to get out of Tempe, but what was the why Austin and not like somewhere closer there, LA, for music?
I'm married and my wife got laid off from her job and she started looking around for work in other towns.
Yeah.
You know, the economy's terrible, you know. So she applied for a job that she never thought she'd get in Austin and got it. We decided to moved, bought a house, made it happen within 30 days.
Wow. What was the job?
She works for Seton.
Okay.
Yeah. She's an asthma educator. She works in the asthma center as a case manager.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And what, do you have a day job?
I do.
What is your day job?
I work over at Whole Foods downtown.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes, sir.
I worked at Whole Foods for a long time.
I think everybody has at some point or another.
I worked when it was at Brody Oaks.
Okay.
I worked there. That's where I met Frenchie.
Oh,
1991. We both worked there. We both worked at Whole Foods. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. He was in the grocery, and then I was in the cashier.
Oh, okay.
We met, I think, when I was in the meat department, because I transferred from the Houston Whole Foods, and the only opening they had was the meat department. Have you ever worked in a meat department?
I have briefly.
Fucking was so gross, dude.
There's blood everywhere.
Well, it's not just that. It was like, it also was coupled with the fact I was dating this vegetarian chick. Who was like against me.
Oh, okay.
And so I would come home like smelling like steamed raw meat.
Yeah.
Which was it's not healthy. Needless to say, we are not together anymore.
Right.
But yeah, that's where I met Frenchie, who produced your record. So anyway, so you moved here.
Moved here.
And
I started trying out for bands immediately.
Right. There's Whole Foods. I mean, I had a band. It was pretty much a lot of Whole Foods people at
there
one
are
point
a lot
in Houston
there.
When I lived in Houston.
There are a lot
of band dudes.
No,
what department do you work in?
I work in produce.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, come see me in produce.
Yeah. I like Whole Foods.
It's a good place.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good spot, it's good people, you know, good products.
Sure.
It's good place to spend the day.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the monolith too. That's like the Death Star Whole Foods.
Man, it is. Yeah, it's like the center of the Whole Foods universe for sure.
Sometimes I see people that worked there from when I worked there, like in the mid '80s. I worked there in 1985 when I was a teenager.
There are people that have been there since it opened.
Yeah,
literally. You know, just they've just been there the whole time.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Like the longevity and the lack of turnaround. In a place so big.
Yeah, it is a good job. They treat you well. Mm-hmm. And they do, you know, you get benefits and stuff. Do you have kids
Absolutely.
Or anything?
No, no kids. No? Just got a couple dogs in the house.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
How long you been married?
For a while now. Since I was 18.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, I got married at 18.
In Norfolk?
In Arizona.
In Arizona. Mm-hmm. But she's from Norfolk?
She's from Arizona.
So you got there and you were like, This is the lady.
It's a bit of a story, but
let's hear it.
Okay, you ready?
I love stories.
All right.
So does the audience.
The audience loves stories. Here's a story for the audience.
Stories of love.
Yes.
Triumph.
Yes. So here we go. 16 years old. Mom passed away from cancer.
Okay.
Right. I didn't know how to handle it. I mean, still thinking back to such a hard time and such a weird time is difficult.
Was she sick for a long time?
She was sick for a couple years.
You guys
were
pretty close? You have siblings?
I have a sister and a younger brother.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
And I was 16 and she passed away. I gave up on school practically for the most part.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just, I don't know if it was, I mean, to blame it on one thing or another, it ended up being laziness is all I can say, you know. And
I mean, also I had a similar experience. My mom passed away when I was when I turned 17.
And oh, okay.
So you get a little listless.
Yeah, absolutely. And
there's not a lot of meaning. Like, why are you going to, like, it's hard to be like, how can you learn about, you know, subjugating a verb?
Right. It's
hard. You know, it's like, it's hard to really put that into perspective when you just lost your mom.
Yeah. I mean, it everything kind of flips.
Yeah.
So we, not being into school much anymore, I had to go. My cousin took me in. I lived with her and, she had, and this was, you're talking about 1995. She had the internet, which was practically in black and white. You know, it was like those BBS boards and chat rooms. And that was all it was. Nothing. Nobody had a website. Nobody had anything. And so I didn't have a job. You know, I was a kid. I was 17 then, or I just turned 18, and I would cruise the music chat rooms, and I would just like talk to people about music and bands and what was going on. It was the mid 90s. So there was like that huge, like, alt rock explosion going on and that kind of thing. And, I ended up striking up a conversation with this girl, who was going to ASU, Arizona State, using their computer system, I think.
So she's a music nerd too.
Yeah. She was totally a music nerd. She still is.
That's great.
And started talking, and for some reason, I guess I just sort of vented a little bit, and what it boils down to is just come out here and hang out. So I did.
It's like before internet love stuff happened.
Yeah.
That's before it happened.
Yeah. And I wasn't looking for anybody.
No.
She wasn't looking
for
anybody.
You guys met in a music chat room, not in a, hey,
exactly,
get me off chat room.
Right, exactly.
In 2002 or something.
Yeah. So, you know, much to my dad's dismay, I got on an airplane and I flew out. And, you know, because there weren't pictures. There weren't anything. You just don't know. It was,
so
it was all over the phone.
You didn't even know what she looked like?
No, no. Uh-uh.
Oh, this is amazing.
And then got off the airplane and hung out in Tempe for, you know, a few days.
Like, when you hung out, like, did you know, outside of her, did you know anyone there? You just,
no,
no job,
nobody,
no home.
Nobody, no, you nothing.
Just, hey,
no.
I'll come out to Tempe. I'll hang out with you. She's like, yeah, come out. It's,
yeah,
it'll be fine.
And then,
and so what do you, in a dorm room or something? Where do you hang out?
No, she had a house. She was staying at a house that her parents provided for her down there. And so hung out there for a couple, you know, couple days.
How did they feel about that?
They didn't live in, like, that town.
They might not have known.
They found out.
But maybe at first, like, oh, this guy's going to come stay with me. I've never seen. I met him on this thing called the internet. What's the internet? What's
exactly.
a chat room? What the hell is wrong with you?
I know, right? It's crazy to think about it now.
It's,
you
cool,
know?
Mom. He's a musician.
Yeah, it's fine. He's a dropout.
With severe emotional problems.
Exactly.
This is going to be great for us.
Traumatic environment. So it didn't take long for me to realize, and I guess for her to realize too, that this, you know, let's go ahead and do this, you know, like, let's, you know,
let's get married.
Yeah. Like, this
how
is
soon?
How, I mean, this was just months. I mean, it was quick.
I'm just trying to think of someone's dad.
Yeah.
You know
right.
what I mean? Like, the only thing that would have made it better is if you would have been like 50.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But the problem, I mean, and it was not the problem, but the thing is her parents are amazing people.
Yeah.
Took me in like I was their own son.
Like she did.
Yeah. And they've been such a support to both of us ever since.
Yeah. What's her name?
Her name's Jackie.
Jackie.
Yeah.
I love Jackie.
Yeah.
This was a great story, Lucas. I'm glad that you told this story.
You pulled it out of me, sir.
It's one of my favorite ones I've heard so far on the podcast. I like good stories like that. And that totally informs who you are as an artist and a musician and informs your life. There's a level of comfort that you can approach life with because you've got obviously a partner.
Yeah.
You know, that believes in you.
Absolutely.
And is a good person. You probably believe in her, too. Hopefully, it goes both ways.
It's
not just her being super nice. So how did you end up with, meeting all the guys in the band? Did you just answer ads?
It was a Craigslist ad.
Okay.
That's...
Did you go on any bunk Craigslist ad auditions?
I did. I went on a few. And, I mean, and none of them were terrible. I wasn't going to any auditions for bands that didn't have anything recorded, you know, like any true startups, that kind of thing. I'm a little, a little too old.
Yeah.
So, there were several bands that I did try out for. I wasn't quite right for them or they weren't quite right for me, but, you know, answered Scott's ad and, he had just released his EP. I don't know if you had a chance to hear it, but it's really well done. The songs are great, and we still perform a lot of it live.
And you guys, he had already recorded it?
He recorded it. Yeah, he recorded it over at SoCo with the guys from Sweet 709.
I don't know them.
Great, like, soul band.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, really good. You should check it out.
And so then he was hiring a band to back him up live.
Right.
And that's how you guys came together.
Yeah, and I like
the EP. A fortuitous thing.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it was definitely approached with a sense of business, you know, as you know, for amateur semi-pro somebody with that status, you know, to take on, you know, to put that on their shoulders to go forward is sure definitely a kind of an interesting situation. But the material was really good. Meeting with Scott and the rest of the guys, because I was the last piece of the puzzle.
Okay.
They were all awesome. I mean, they still are, obviously. And just no ego, no attitude, just like we just want to work hard. We want to stay motivated. We want to do, you know, play these songs. Okay. So then what we ended up doing was getting at Music Lab, you know, and just ideas started coming up and we started changing stuff around a little bit, playing around a little bit more until we started writing as a band. And then that's when things sort of shifted over and became, you know, a collective.
Yeah. Was that easy for Scott? Was he okay with that?
Yeah.
I mean, because that's a whole different vibe. But
it totally is.
Does he ever get mad at you guys and go like, you know, I hired you?
No. There's nothing like that. It's like I said, man, there's no ego. There's no attitude. And Scott still brings a majority of the ideas to the table. Like,
okay.
I've got this idea and we all put in our input. And since we all come from such different places, that's how the band gets its sound.
Right.
If it was all Ryan, it would definitely have a different sound than if it was all Scott,
you
know, or all me or Ryan.
Right. And I'd listened to it before I watched the thing and I was getting like, definitely like there are moments of rock, like the song that opened up the interview opens up very bombastic and loud and big and rock. And then it comes down to a more acoustic based sort of strumming song. And when I was watching the Kickstarter video, it talked about how you guys were an acoustic band first.
Right.
Is that how you guys kind of sit around with some acoustic instruments? And
not at all. Not anymore. With the Kickstarter video, that was before we were writing then, but the band hadn't really fully developed its sound at that point. Everything still kind of comes... Everything from Scott still comes from...
We're still a new band.
Right.
I mean, this record is going to be really different than probably your next record.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. As far as the acoustic band, it always will have that foundation.
Do you do acoustic shows, like unplugged shows?
We have. Yeah. We have just recently. We played The Parish as an acoustic band.
Oh.
And that was it.
What's the difference?
For me?
For everyone, for the whole thing.
Well, it takes taking the distortion out of it is very...
That's a lot of times eventually that's like what the unplugged show was, because people started playing electric guitars on there, but just not running them through.
It's kind of like taking your pants off, you know, like exposed and everything that you do is,
you know, but you don't bring like any different instruments or anything?
For that, well,
like you play electric bass?
No,
you play acoustic bass.
I played
bass.
An acoustic bass, and that was the first time I played this instrument live. It's a 5-string fretless acoustic jumbo.
Whoa!
Yeah, it's like playing a cello strapped to your chest.
How was that?
It was difficult.
Yeah,
it required a lot of practice.
You play fretless a lot? Do you like fretless?
Just on that acoustic.
Okay. It's yours? You bought it?
I bought it.
Yeah.
And it hangs on the wall and it gets some use. I mostly got it because when it's recorded, it sounds like an upright.
Right.
And I was doing a lot of home recording. And it's the second time I've owned this particular instrument. And I was doing a lot of recording the first time. The first one that I bought. And I was using it for like a lighter sound, you know,
right.
A more, you know, to get that upright sound on the recording. And then I ended up selling it because gear is in and out of my place all the time. And then that was one thing that I always missed. So I found another one, surprisingly enough, somebody else had an acoustic electric 5-string fretless bass. So I snatched it up and it gets some use. Yeah.
So how did you guys get with Frenchie? How did that end up happening? Chris Frenchie Smith, who's produced The Darkness and The Toadies and a million other people. I don't even know who to talk about.
What we were gigging and we needed a record and we sat down and it was a very short list and he was at the top of that short list of people in town, you know. Like, what if we got him? You know, let's approach him.
So, yeah, he's an approachable guy.
Absolutely.
How'd you approach him? On the internet?
Yeah, email was sent out.
Anybody?
Yeah, hey, we're a new band with nothing. How about, you know, helping us with the record?
And he said, yeah, this is great.
Let's do this. He came out to a show, watched the show, talked to us afterwards, and then started coming to practices, pre-production meetings, and that
I
kind
like
of thing.
Those.
Yeah,
that you was get great. A lot out of. Is he good at that? He's what does great. He bring to the table? It cuts up your songs, chops them up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, let's take this out. This is the fat.
It was.
Put
it
another
was,
one of these here.
It was expressed in the very beginning that we were okay with him doing
sure
what he wanted, because you know we wanted to make the best record we could.
Right.
So that's you know.
So that's what you did.
Yeah, we didn't want to be blindsided by our own, you know, artistic integrity.
Right.
We wanted to, you know.
And the record making process was good.
It was. It was great. Fun? Yeah, that record was made in 7 days.
7 days. Seven yes. songs in 7 days.
Yes, sir.
It doesn't really take 40,000 days to make an album. You can
Not
do it.
Not for us.
And no.
And a lot of that was tracked live. Frenchie wanted, he saw us live. He saw us practice. He said the way he wanted to approach the record was he wanted it to be a live record. He wanted it four dudes in a room knocking out these tracks.
Yeah.
And that's what we did. And a lot, you know, there's overdubs and there's studio wizardry and magic there, but I'm not going to tell you it was recorded straight to tape, but
right.
But it was
there
definitely
is wizardry.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's in there. If you can,
there's wizardry on everything.
If you can spot the wizardry.
So you guys did a Kickstarter thing for that and you obviously filled your thing.
We did. What we did was
how much did you ask for?
We asked for $6,000.
And you got it?
We got it. We got just over $6,000. What we had done was we came up with the money for tracking on
okay.
our own.
Yeah.
And that was to prove to people that we were going to ask for the rest of this money that, hey, we're going in as much as we can.
Yeah.
You know, here's
we'll match.
Yeah. Here's the kick. We're getting this started. We need help. You know, because, you know, the mixing, mastering,
I like that.
Production
I like
process.
That aspect. I like that approach to it. What did you, what were your incentives? What did you have to do?
There was t-shirts and records. Or
we didn't go
CDs.
Make anyone dinner or anything weird.
You
like
know,
that.
There was, our lead guitarist was giving lessons.
Okay.
That
that's
kind of
cool.
thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Practical.
We honestly didn't get too
weird.
Yeah, not too crazy adventurous. We did have one backer that got to come on stage and play a song. At a
record
party
release.
That we held, yeah. And
so when did the record come out?
May 25th.
And it's called Agnes.
Mm-hmm. It's named after Frenchie's dog.
Oh, okay. What kind of dog is that?
She's a little terrier.
What
mix.
Kind of dogs do you have?
I have an English bulldog named Rupert.
Okay, that's a great.
And
name.
I have a Shar Pei mix named George.
These are my dogs. This is a painting of my two guys over there.
Is that
a greyhound and a Doberman?
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. I had this guy for a while, but my girlfriend left me. That was Benny.
Oh, yeah.
And she took him. They all go with their moms.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm going to go see those guys right after we're done.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
What are their names?
Taylor is the Doberman and Dylan is the Greyhound.
Nice.
They're great guys. They've been on the show.
Have they?
Yeah, they've whined before. They don't like it here, so no. They get all nervous and just whine while I'm sitting here doing this. So so then you were sending out your Kickstarter thing and you met a group called The Smalls from England.
Yes.
Which is a film collective.
Right. It's a short film community.
Can you quickly describe your involvement with them?
We sent out, well, to create interest in the Kickstarter and to kind of spread the word a little bit, we sent out the info and a video that we made to online blogs and websites. And they latched onto it immediately and started supporting it. They wrote articles about it. They posted on their website that, you know, this, you know, we have this opportunity, and they just really dug what we were doing.
Yeah.
You know, and that relationship has since grown, and it's been, the support is unbelievable, especially coming from, you know, like kind of an old school mindset where you were sending out demo tapes, you know, with a one sheet to people that you never hear back from. Now, right, with the internet, like, you're connected.
Yeah.
And information can get spread and you can receive support that you would have never received 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's definitely heartwarming to know that they've got our back with this, and, you know, to see that support was overwhelming. And that relationship has just grown, yeah, as they have, you know, they've taken off and they're doing some amazing things.
Like
the pitch room.
Yeah. All right. So that's, so you guys are doing that. You're going to, do some work with them. They're coming at South by Southwest, right? That's what somebody wrote me.
That's the plan.
Who wrote me? Maria?
Maria, yeah, is the editor for The Smalls. She's been our main contact and amazing person. Just a great supporter and, you know.
Yeah.
And everything. She's been great. We're working on getting... To describe the project first, it would be, we have a song called Marigold.
Right. You'll hear that at the end of the show.
And we are putting together a toolkit where people can go to thesmalls.com, download the toolkit, and filmmakers and editors and anybody can cut it up, chop it up, however they want, and create a video for Marigold.
That's awesome. That's pretty cool.
And it's open to anybody in the world. I mean, it's a, like I said, it's a London-based website, but I think over 40% of their members are based here in the U.S., so it's, you know, it's worldwide.
That's great.
Yeah. We're really excited about it.
Yeah. Should be.
Yeah. So with that, like, it's still kind of in its developmental stages. We still don't have a definite launch date yet. We're hoping for next week.
But people can keep up with southbounddrive.com.
Yes, or on our Sonic Bids page. Okay. At sonicbids.com/southbounddrive.
So just Southbound Drive, Googling, mm-hmm, probably found
it'll,
you.
It'll bring us up. It'll bring up Facebook and Twitter, yeah, and everything else.
You tweet?
We do.
You good tweeters?
We're not.
No?
No, not really. It's a lot of late night pics in New Orleans kind of thing. I mean, it's...
And you guys are going to do a tour of, go out to Louisiana sometime soon.
So sometime real soon. Yeah. Yeah. A good friend of ours, Mike Twillman's opening up a venue just off of Tulane campus.
Nice.
And we'll be there hopefully early next year.
I spent a couple of rad, times in the Tulane campus.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I had a friend. I can't remember exactly how it worked because it was a long time ago. It's probably like 22 years ago or something. And I went and stayed in the girls' dorm.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was around Christmas time, like right before it let out for Christmas. So I went and hung out.
Okay.
It wasn't what you would hope for me staying at the girls' dorm.
No.
You know? I'm still a dork. You know? It seems cool. It was cool, but it wasn't that cool.
It wasn't that cool.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was like cool, three ways. It was just a normal time.
Yeah.
But I did like the drinking underage,
yeah,
which was fine with me. And so you get good crowds out there in Louisiana?
We do. We've got some good friends out there now that we've made.
And you guys don't really have anything coming up here until like December?
December, we're working on, we're okay. waiting on confirmation for a couple shows, but...
So in the meantime, go to southbounddrive.com.
Yes.
Pick up a copy of Agnes.
Absolutely.
It's on the iTunes.
It is.
And wherever you buy music, hopefully.
Waterloo. It's in Waterloo.
If you're in Austin.
Yes.
But no other record stores anywhere?
No, not at the moment.
Do you find that record stores are kind of, you know, outside of Waterloo? Do you need another record store? Because there's nothing really going on in record stores.
It's kind of sad.
Yeah.
You know, that has gone that way. I mean, it's revolutionized in technology. I mean, you just have to kind of change with the times, I guess. But
you do.
Thumbing through records is...
It's hard to find a place. When I was a kid and I wanted new music, you know, in the 80s, I had a guy at a record store.
Okay.
And I would go be like, hey, man, you know what I like? I like this and this. What's out that I'd like?
Yeah.
And he'd be like, oh, let me turn you on to this. And now I went to Best Buy one time looking for, and this is my mistake for not going to a place like Waterloo, but I went to go get the you know, the classic album series. They did Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, oh, Dan yeah. the Torpedoes.
Yes.
I saw it had come out and it was for sale. So I was like, shit, I'm going to go get it. Mm-hmm. So I go to the Best Buy and I say to the girl, I go, excuse me, do you have... Tom Petty, Damn the Torpedoes video. And she goes, who? And I go, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Damn the Torpedoes. It's a video that just came out from VH1. And so she goes to the computer. She goes, come with me. She's the manager of the music section.
Okay. This is going to be disappointing.
And she goes, okay, Tom Petty and who?
Oh, God.
And I was just like, not that, but you just should, I mean, they play the Super Bowl. It's kind of like...
They've been around a little while.
Yeah. What is that band that Mick Jagger's in? You know what I mean? Yeah. It was kind of like one of those moments. Yeah. Rolling what? And you're like, come on, man. That moment happened like a year and a half ago. I just was like, man, it's kind of...
The record...
It doesn't mean a lot like it used to. You know what I mean? There's not, you know, like when you were on your chat room and you met Jackie on there.
Right.
As kids, like, man, looking for more information on music.
Yeah,
you know?
there was many times.
People that listen to this podcast, like, you're looking for more info.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's times, like, walking out of the record store where you're absolutely positive that you got the best album that was in there, and you could not wait to listen to it.
Yeah.
And that anticipation and that excitement, you know, the material just is intangible.
And you know what I think happens is I think sometimes that gets confused and put on the artist, like, oh, there's no good people, that's why. But there are good people. There's probably even more good people than there have ever been.
Right. Because it's
at once.
Yeah.
Happening.
It's easier and it's cheaper to be better.
Yeah.
You know.
But I don't think you should blame it on the musicians. I think you should blame it on just the world.
It's just, you know, it's changed.
I'm mad at the world.
Mad at the world.
No, not even that it should be blamed, but, you know, it's changed and now we're in a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just got to go with it.
Yeah.
Relax, enjoy it.
Exactly.
That's what's happening.
And still find it. Still look for that good music.
Yeah.
Because it's out there.
Yeah. Lucas, am I missing anything?
I don't think so. Hit up thesmalls.com.
Yeah, thesmalls.com. Check that out.
Yeah, keep an eye on the pitch room. It's gonna be really
and that's
exciting.
A section on their website, the pitch room.
Yeah, okay. It's gonna be launching.
Go there and find out what's going on. Find out when the Southbound Drive video is available for you to do what you want to it.
Exactly. We shot unique performance footage for this project that doesn't exist anywhere else. We went out to Kingsland and shot in the dining room of the old Chainsaw Massacre house.
Oh, nice.
You know, to kind of give a little bit of flavor. Let's tie Austin.
Little vibe.
Let's tie Texas to the film community a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, but there's a lot of there's a lot of cool stuff in that toolkit to kind of put together, and we're encouraging complete freedom. Use it. Don't use what we've got. Make up your own stuff. Animate it. Whatever you want to do. We don't care. We want to see the creativity coming out and the people that participate in this contest.
Yeah. It's a good song too.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. Is that kind of like your single track?
We've out of the seven songs.
A focus track?
What is it
that it's called now?
I guess it is, isn't it? It's a focus track.
The main song.
We actually left it up to Maria. We gave her carte blanche on which song. We're like, okay, we'll choose out of these four.
Yeah.
Which one will be the subject of this contest?
Yeah.
And she chose Marigold, which is kind of interesting because it's one of the stronger songs on the album.
Well, that's good. It's good that you didn't choose the one that you thought was the worst.
Well, I don't know if I have a worst. there's a uniqueness about Marigold in the album. Yeah. You know, there's definitely a it's a poppy, happy track, you know, but it's one of those where the arrangement to get a little music nerdy with you without knowing what I'm talking about, it kind of pulls and releases throughout the song until at the very end.
That's what people like.
You know, you get that. You get the payoff.
Yeah. The happy ending.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a good place to stop this interview.
All right.
The happy ending. All right, Lucas Griffin from Southbound Drive. Be sure you pick up their new album, Agnes. It's out. I like how I pick it up to look at it like I'm on pick a show. and thank you. Tell the other guys I said hi, and I'd love to come see you guys play sometime.
Absolutely.
Hopefully
we'll be in touch.
I will be playing sometime.
Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you. All right. That was Lucas Griffin from the band Southbound Drive. I'd like to thank him for coming by. They got that record out. Agnes, go get it. And be sure you go and do a little pledge music for my friend Shane. Throw him a little cashish out there in the world of money. Yeah. So yeah, throw him a little money, Shane, to fund his band Ronson. And then look for Johnny A-Track, my new friend, Johnny Aiken. All right, everybody, thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a great weekend. Or whenever you're listening to this, I hope you're having a great time. Maybe you don't have pants on. Write me something. Drop me a line. Facebook, like our page. Twitter, follow me, at Johnny Gowdy. And while you're on the iTunes, subscribe to this podcast. It's good. It's called How Did I Get Here? Did you enjoy the show? Maybe you did. Here's a little more Southbound Drive. This is their song, Marigold. They're doing that video for, so check it out. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye. Cigarette, she's whispering my name.